Welcome, everybody, to the very first edition of Rounding Third Sports. My name is Steve, and we're going to get right into this. So first, I want to give you a little background about myself. I consider myself a big sports fan, of course, hence why I'm starting this podcast. My favorite sports are college football, Major League Baseball, and then I do follow the NFL mostly. Favorite teams. I am in the Cincinnati area, so obviously I follow a lot of the Cincinnati and local sports, you know, the Cincinnati Reds. The Bengals a little bit. I'm more of an Atlanta Falcons fan when it comes to the NFL. And then college football, I did graduate from Ohio State, so I am a big Buckeyes fan. I will do my best in this podcast not to sway my opinions specifically for those teams, but obviously, as they are my favorite teams, a lot of topics might revolve around them. A couple of my favorite players. In Major League Baseball, my favorite players have always been Chipper Jones, third baseman from the Atlanta Braves, and then Barry Larkin, shortstop from the Cincinnati Reds. Also a big fan of Ken Griffey Jr., who, as everybody probably knows, a Seattle Mariner, a Cincinnati Red, a little bit of time with the Chicago White Sox. So he kind of spent a little bit of time all over the place. But the majority of his time was with Seattle and Cincinnati. So let's jump right into this. I'm going to start this episode with college football. So first thing I wanted to get out there is just go over a few of the head coaching changes this year. So there were a good amount of coaches that switched teams, but not a lot, as I feel like it was less than normal. So normally I feel like there would have been more coaching changes, and there could still be. We are still a good amount of time off from the start of the season. As of this moment, I believe there's one head coaching position in the group of five, being Central Florida. So they are currently open as their coach. Josh, and bear with me, guys, as I try to pronounce names, but Josh Heupel, he was their head coach. He actually moved on to Tennessee. A few other big names: Kevin Sumlin out at Arizona, replaced by Jed Fish, who was the Patriots quarterbacks coach in the NFL. Butch Jones, who was UC's coach at one time, went to Tennessee, now at Arkansas State. Few other big names here: Lovie Smith out at Illinois, replaced by Brett Bielema. Terry Bowden returns at Louisiana Monroe. And Steve Sarkisian, of course, Alabama's offensive coordinator, moves on to take over the head coaching job at Texas. So a few big names there that have moved colleges. However, not a ton. Like I said, I feel like there have been more in the past, more bigger names moving, more coordinators moving up. Obviously, out of the ones I named, there's a couple that came from the NFL. But for the most part, the rest of the head coaching changes came from offensive coordinators, and a couple defensive coordinators. So that is going to do it for the coaching carousel. We're going to move on to another big topic released this week, which is the Big Ten schedule. So the Big Ten has released their schedule for this upcoming season, obviously barring any changes from, obviously, COVID or anything like that. But as of this moment, they have released their schedules for their conference. Several changes that were made from what was already released, but we will get into a little bit of this. Obviously, this is going to be an improvement from a shortened 2020 season, where we saw the Big Ten play very few games, which caused obviously a lot of discussion amongst college football enthusiasts and analysts when it came to the playoff. So one big game I wanted to talk about, not really big in terms of ranking, but just as of location. So as of this moment, so we are at February 5th, As of this moment, the Nebraska-Illinois game is scheduled to kick off the season, and that game is slated to be played in Dublin, Ireland. So that is on August 28th. So an interesting choice of teams, in my opinion, for a game in Dublin, Ireland, but interesting to see still. I'd be intrigued just to watch the game, just to see the atmosphere in another country. So a few other changes that were made to the Big Ten schedule. Again, I don't know what their old schedules were, but Michigan State at Indiana is now October 16th. Wisconsin Purdue, October 23rd. Michigan at Michigan State is now October 30th. And a few other changes in there in terms of dates. As far as my Buckeyes are concerned, obviously we're looking to come back from a loss in the national championship. We actually open our season September 2nd at Minnesota. Our big non-conference game this year is home against Oregon, September 11th. So that's week two for us. As far as that, there's not a whole lot of other changes. I think there were a few games that changed weeks, but that's about it. We get our bye week the week before Indiana, the week before we travel to Indiana. So that should be a big game as Indiana brought back a lot of their top players. So that'll be an interesting game as we come back off of a very close game this past season. We follow the Indiana game up at home against Penn State. So obviously that's always a big game, whether it's in the Horseshoe in Columbus or if it's at Happy Valley in Pennsylvania. So obviously the big whiteout that usually happens when we travel to Penn State, but this year we will be at home. And then of course we end the season at Michigan. This is going to be the first time in a while that we have played Michigan, our back-to-back games against Michigan are both at Michigan. So obviously last year the game was canceled due to COVID and whatever you want to talk about there. And I'm not going to dwell on the past season. I'm not going to get into that, but whatever your thoughts on that, now we have back-to-back games against Michigan that were at Michigan. So looking forward to the 2022 season where we get to come back home. But one keynote too, it's also back on Thanksgiving weekend. So for anybody that follows the Buckeyes, obviously that is the game. That is the big game for us each year. And for the longest time, it was the weekend of Thanksgiving. And then things kind of got shuffled around and we ended up moving it to the following weekend. So having it back on Thanksgiving weekend, which I think just has to do with how the calendar falls this year. So November 27th is the game. Obviously, that's right at the end of the month. So I'm sure if Thanksgiving were a little earlier, it still would fall probably the week after Thanksgiving. So check out the Big Ten schedule if you're interested. I did want to scroll through here just to see what other big non-conference games there are. So Indiana actually has a home game against Cincinnati as well. So you see fans, that should be a decent game, especially for those that feel like they were slighted last season in not getting, whether it be in the playoff, whether it be a better bowl game, whatever the case may be. There's your chance. Honestly, there's your chance for redemption as you face an Indiana team that, again, almost upset the Buckeyes, had probably one of their best seasons in a long time, if not ever. So a big game to look forward to September 18th. Michigan has a home game against Washington. And Michigan State actually travels to Miami. So that September 18th week has some decent games for the Big Ten teams. So that'll be interesting to see. Nebraska travels to Oklahoma, also September 18th. So they renew that rivalry from back in Nebraska's Big 12 days. And then there was one other one I saw here. Penn State has a home game against Auburn also September 18th. So September 18th looks like it's going to be the week for a lot of the big non-conference games this season. Again, at least for the Big Ten. Purdue at Notre Dame. And then Wisconsin has a home game. Well, Wisconsin has a game against Notre Dame. It's actually not going to be a home a technical home game for either team, as they will be playing at Soldier Field in Chicago. And that will do it for the Big Ten schedule. So, yeah, we'll dive into that more as the season progresses. Obviously, when we get closer to spring, there's a long way to go between now and the fall. So a lot of things can happen. A lot of things can change. But as of right now, we're looking at a full slate of games this year. So it'll be intriguing to see how things progress here in the next couple of months as we approach spring games and spring practices and all of that. Moving on, still in college football, but the last topic I want to cover in college football today is recruiting. So obviously we had signing day, so there's been a lot of stuff that's come down. So I want to start just, again, because I am a Buckeyes fan, because that's who I follow, I want to start with the Buckeyes recruiting class. So we are actually ranked number two. We have the number two class in the country behind only Alabama. So just as a reference, last year we were number five overall recruiting class. As of this moment, next year we are slated as number one. Now, obviously, I know a lot is going to change between now and next year, but intriguing to see that we are currently at number one. Big Ten rank, obviously being number two in the country, we're number one in the Big Ten, and we hold that pretty steadily. So our top recruits, defensive end Jack Sawyer, who is from the local Columbus area in Pickerington, five-star recruit. I'm not going to go through the whole class, but just cover like the five-star recruits. Jack Sawyer, defensive end, 6'5", 248 pounds, ranked nationally fourth, third at his position, first in the state. Another wide receiver we added, Emeka Egbuka, 6'1", 190, nationally ranked number nine, first in his position. So that's 2 years in a row we recruit the number one wide receiver, last year being Julian Fleming, and then this year being Egbuka. So intriguing things, good things for our stacked quarterback room, which I'll get to here in a minute. But we've got some weapons. So obviously, just on a little side note there, obviously they came out with the rankings for the top wide receivers returning to college. And number one and number two both belong to the Buckeyes with Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. So having Julian Fleming, having the rest of our receiver class that we recruited last year, along with Egbuka and any other recruits we have this year, that is a pretty stacked, not only quarterback room, but now a wide receiver room as well. So some good weapons for some new quarterbacks. The next five-star recruit we had was offensive guard Donovan Jackson from Texas, number one, so the top offensive guard, ranked 18th nationally. Running back Trevion Henderson from Virginia, nationally ranked 22, number one running back. So we lose Trey Sermon, and really look for that next one after J.K. Dobbins. Master Teague didn't really fulfill that role well this year, and then obviously fought injuries and other issues in a shortened season. Trey Sermon, as good as he was in the Clemson game and the Indiana game, didn't really produce the rest of the season. So he was he didn't even get the starting job until we got to, I think, Indiana. So, and that's the Big Ten, not Indiana, I'm sorry, the Big Ten championship game, Northwestern. I keep saying Indiana, Northwestern in the Big Ten championship. So he obviously had that big game against them. So it'll be good to see a five-star running back come in and battle Master Teague, as well as battle Williams that was a third string last year. And then Kyle McCord, who is our number five recruit. He was number 27 overall, third overall quarterback. So he is a pro-style quarterback out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So he joins an already crowded quarterback room with C.J. Stroud and Jack Miller. So he brings number three. And then for those of you that already know, or maybe you don't, we do have the top quarterback prospect for next year in Quinn Ewers. So we're going to have four very young quarterbacks. Obviously, by next year, Stroud and Miller will both be in year three. So it won't be crowded for long, but we will have four quarterbacks that were ranked in the top, I believe, 30 or 40 in their respective classes in our quarterback room. So good things coming to Columbus after losing out on Justin Fields going pro. Obviously, I don't blame Justin Fields being as he should be a top five pick this year. And so that actually does it for the five-star recruits. So that's five five-star recruits for the Buckeyes this year. In comparison to Alabama, had seven five-star recruits. But looking through the top overall recruits in the country, Corey Foreman, defensive end, committed to Southern California. He's a California guy, so it makes sense. Offensive tackle J.C. Latham, committed to Alabama. So he's from Florida. The number three recruit, JT, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I promise I will butcher it, but the defensive end out of Washington, as of right now, it's still saying that he is slated to commit to Ohio State. I'm not going to get myself excited about that until I know it's a done deal, but that's another defensive end. So we would be adding – not only would we be adding two defensive ends this season – but that would be the number three and the number four overall ranked players in the country that we would be recruiting. So anybody that watched the Buckeyes play this season realized how much we missed having that Chase Young or that Nick Bosa or even that Joey Bosa on the defensive end side. We didn't have that power rusher like we are so used to. So it'll be good to see how these guys progress in their development. So that's going to do it for college football, I believe. Yeah, we're gonna end college football there and transition over to Major League Baseball. So obviously, I considered myself a really big Major League Baseball fan. I have always followed it. One team I did not mention while I was talking about my favorite teams. Obviously, when I talked about the NFL, I mentioned the Falcons were my favorite team. The same goes in baseball. Now, I am Reds first. But if I had a number two team, which I do, it would be the Atlanta Braves. So, yes, I'm in the Cincinnati area. I grew up watching a lot of Atlanta sports with my dad coming from Georgia. So, followed a lot of Atlanta sports just as much as I followed Cincinnati sports. So Reds and Braves, my two big baseball teams. Obviously, you kind of saw that when I talked about my favorite players being Chipper Jones from the Braves and then Barry Larkin from the Reds. So just a little side note as we transition here into baseball. The first thing I wanted to talk about was MLB free agency. So obviously, a lot of players changing teams. It's exciting to see. But as a Reds fan, also a little sad to see as well, which I will get to here momentarily. So going through the top free agents. So we see the number one free agent this season was actually, and this can be debated at another time, but I'm going to kind of go through probably, I'm for sure going to go through the top 20 free agents. We'll discuss quickly where they went and what their contracts look like, and then I'll kind of skim through and talk about any other potential big names or important changes. So number one being JT Realmuto from Philly, catcher. He's 29 years old, and he just signed an extension to stay in Philadelphia for 5 years, $115.5 million. George Springer, the number two Free agent center fielder from Houston, 31 years old, signed a six-year contract, $150 million with the Toronto Blue Jays. So an interesting change there. It went from Houston to Toronto. Toronto gets that big bat to go along with Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. So some potential good things happening in Toronto to make them competitive there in the American League East, which they're going to need, as we talked about the next free agent, which is DJ LeMahieu, 32-year-old second baseman, stays with the Yankees 6 years, $90 million. So the Yankees already have players like Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and others that make them very competitive. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Rays being a top team there. You can never really count out the Red Sox. It's hard to tell what kind of season they're going to have. And then the Baltimore Orioles kind of bring up the bottom of that division. I feel like in my lifetime, and I'm sure there's probably been a couple of years back in the Ripken days where they were good. I just feel like in my lifetime, the Baltimore Orioles have really been non-competitive. Now, I know I'm sure there's been a couple of seasons where they were somewhat competitive, but for the longest time, the Yankees obviously dominated that division. The Red Sox spent a long time, spent a good amount of time at the top of the division lately. And then the Rays, really, the Rays since the late 2000s have really kind of stayed competitive there as well. So seeing the Blue Jays now being competitive there or trying to build themselves up to be competitive, that is going to be interesting to see what happens in that division. The number four one, and this is the one that I'm going to be honest, this is the one that makes me sad to talk about. But Trevor Bauer, 30-year-old starting pitcher, obviously had that Cy Young year last year with Cincinnati, which I'll be honest, when we got him from Cleveland, did not expect. Now, obviously, I thought Trevor Bauer was a good pitcher, did not expect a Cy Young season. And obviously, it was a shortened season, but still, to be able to pull off that is no easy task, no matter the length of the season. So yeah, he wins the Cy Young. We're somewhat excited here in Cincinnati as we, we have that award winner, even though we didn't really have that great of a season. And then come to find out, yeah, he's not coming back. Shouldn't be shocked by this. Obviously, winning the Cy Young is going to get you a very good contract, and it did. So unfortunately, it's the team he went to, being the Los Angeles Dodgers, the World Series champs, the team that really didn't need him. However, they get him for 3 years, $102 million. They were talking, and I don't have the numbers, but they were talking that would make him the richest, he would have the highest salary for 2021. So obviously, $102 million, not the highest contract ever. But being only 3 years, that should make him the highest paid player this season, this upcoming season. So interesting thing to look at. And, we might dive into that in another episode. But not today. That's not going to be the one we do today. Number five, left fielder, 30-year-old Marcelo Ozuna. So as of the writing of this list that I'm looking at, he was unsigned. However, that changed last night as he agrees to return to Atlanta. So he stays in Atlanta along with Ronald Acuna Jr. out in that outfield. So that is a great news for my Atlanta Braves. So sad news on the Reds losing a player. Good news on the Braves keeping a player. Number six is Marcus Semien, shortstop from Oakland, moves to also Toronto. So 1 year, $18 million to be Toronto's shortstop for a year. Now that is intriguing to me because of the fact that is Bo Bichette, I would have to look it up. I don't have it here pulled up on my screen, but is Bo Bichette a shortstop or is he a second baseman? I'm pretty sure he's a shortstop. So unless Marcus Semien is going to move positions, Marcus Semien basically just signed an $18 million contract to ride the bench or maybe potentially be the DH. Number seven, Marcus Stroman stays at the Mets for 1 year, $18.9 million. So the Mets making some big moves, which I'll talk about a little bit today, but more so in trades than anything else. Kevin Gausman stays with the Giants, 1 year, $18.9 million. Liam Hendricks from Oakland, so Oakland's closing pitcher, goes to the White Sox for three years, $54 million. So the White Sox are another team that have made some moves this year. And again, not necessarily in free agency, but through trades, they're trying to be competitive. Nelson Cruz, I don't have an update on him. He's 40 years old. He was with the Twins last year. I don't know if he retired or if he's just unsigned right now. So that'll be interesting to watch. Maybe I'll have a little bit of an update for that next, on my next episode. Masahiro Tanaka comes in at number 11. He is technically not a free agent anymore. He actually went back to Japan and signed with a team over there. So he will not be in the major leagues this season. Justin Turner, free agent from the Dodgers, 36-year-old. Again, I don't have an update on him. I don't know if he is going to be I'm going to try to refresh my page real quick just to see if there was any updates. Obviously, I got the news. No, it didn't even update Marcelo Ozuna. So I don't know if Justin Turner has signed anywhere yet or not. James McCann went from the White Sox to the Mets. Just to kind of glance through these, Trevor May went from the Twins to the Mets. Charlie Morton, starting pitcher from the Rays, had a really good season last year, goes to the Braves for 1 year, $15 million. Just glancing down through the rest of these moves for anything big. Not really big, but Mike Minor goes from the Rangers to the Royals. Kirby Yates goes from the Padres to the Blue Jays. Corey Kluber goes from the Rangers to the Yankees, 1 year, $11 million. Jock Peterson, he went from the Dodgers to the Cubs, 1 year, $7 million. Chris Archer, so this also is not updated, but he returns to Tampa. So he spent, I think it was 2 years maybe, in Pittsburgh, but he is now over in Tampa. He's back to where he started at, down in Tampa. And then glancing down through here, there's not a whole lot of other big names that have really moved. Adam Eaton goes from the Nationals to the White Sox. John Lester goes from the Cubs to the Nationals. Freddie Galvis, another Cincinnati Red, goes to the Orioles. So the frustrating thing as I scroll down through here is I see the Reds on the wrong side of this. I see the Reds in the column for the 2020 team. I don't see the Reds listed anywhere for new team for any of these players. Now, there's a lot of still top players that they can go after. I realistically don't see it happening. The top player left, I'm not going to count Nelson Cruz being as he's a DH, 40 years old. The Reds aren't going to go out of their way to sign him. Having Eugenio Suarez, they're not going to go for Justin Turner either. However, I could see them going after 30-year-old Trevor Rosenthal. I could see that. I could see them going after James Paxton or Jake Odorizzi. So these are guys that are in the top 20 free agents that are still available that, I mean, we realistically could go for. And I'm looking mostly at pitchers here. Brad Hand, still a free agent. I don't know that that's true. I feel like I saw a report of him signing somewhere, so he might not be available. But Reds also lose Archie Bradley. And, yeah, I talked about Freddie Galvez. So that's going to do it for free agents for Major League Baseball. So, obviously, the big topic right now in Major League Baseball, or within the past week, I should say, is the big trade from Colorado. So Nolan Arenado, who was considered a top third baseman, the top third baseman most likely, traded to the St. Louis Cardinals. And for the Cardinals, the good part out of it is that the Rockies are going to pay a large share of the remaining salary that he has. So he's a five-time All-Star. They consider him an elite combination of power and value in the field. So Continuing on talking about the Nolan Arenado trade to the St. Louis Cardinals, I'd mentioned where Colorado is paying $50 million out of his remaining $199 million contract. So that's a good chunk of it, and that includes his entire 2021 salary of $35 million. On top of that, he still keeps his opt-out clause after the 2021 season. He adds an additional opt-out clause after the 2022 season. And the Cardinals added one more year to his contract, meaning he is signed through the 2027 season. So it'll be interesting to see first how the Cardinals play this season. Obviously, we get a full season most likely this year, 162 games. Nolan Arenado struggled in the shortened 2020 season. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Obviously, he joins a lineup including Paul Goldschmidt at first base, Paul DeJong at second base, Yadier Molina at catcher, and then some younger players outside of that. So it'll be interesting to see how he mixes with those players. It'll be interesting to see how he plays in Busch Stadium compared to Coors Field. And obviously anybody that knows that understands that the Rockies get a lot of bad rap for Coors Field. You look at guys like Carlos Gonzalez that played really well in Colorado and had a decent career with other teams, but kind of fell off the map after he left Colorado. And there's others that left Colorado and didn't play as well. So it's an intriguing situation, obviously not for Reds fans because that means we're playing against Nolan Arenado a lot more, but it will be interesting to see if he helps the Cardinals rebound from what hasn't been the greatest of seasons. Obviously that division, the Cubs have controlled the division a lot more. The Brewers have controlled the division a lot more. So teams like the Cardinals and the Reds who are trying to build up to be competitive, which I wouldn't necessarily say the Reds are trying to be competitive this season, sadly. But it'll be interesting to see if Nolan Arenado can boost the Cardinals the way they think he can. Moving on to the season start for Major League Baseball. So as of this moment, we are looking at a full 162-game season. So Major League Baseball proposed a shortened 154-game season. Obviously, that's only an 8-game difference. But the kicker was that players would get their full 162-game salary. The Players Association voted on it and rejected it. So it sounds to me that the Players Association is ready for things to get back to normal, play a full season, and just go out there and do what they're paid to do. So hopefully nothing changes that. As of right now, we are 2 weeks away from teams reporting to camp. Spring training is looking to kick off on time. Teams do have to submit their plan for fans in attendance. So the Red Sox have already announced they're doing, I think it's 24% capacity down in Fort Myers, Florida. Several other teams, the Diamondbacks, the Cardinals, the Pirates, the Marlins, and there were a couple other teams on there have submitted their plans. A couple teams have tickets on sale already for spring training. There should not be any issues. Florida is, I'm pretty sure, fully reopened. They're just about fully reopened. So there should be no issues there. Arizona has teams playing with fans. The Phoenix Suns have fans. The Coyotes, I believe, in the NHL have fans. So there should be no issues in spring training. And then as far as the regular season starts, I know the Rays are the only ones that have submitted a plan so far. being that they will allow 7,000 fans per game. Now, anybody that has been to Tampa or St. Petersburg, anybody that's been inside of Tropicana Field knows that they have struggled for a long time with getting fans in that building. Anyway, so 7,000 realistically is probably an average game for them. I hate to say that. I hate to sound like that, but that's probably realistic. As far as anything else regarding the season starting rule changes, so obviously the National League had the designated hitter last season. That will not be the case in 2021, at least as of this moment. They have not added that to this upcoming season, as well as the expanded playoffs. It does not look like that is going to happen for 2021 either. So the collective bargaining agreement will be renegotiated most likely after this season, but definitely before next season. So with that, we most likely will see things like designated hitter in the National League and expanded playoffs negotiated and put into the new CBA. So I can definitely see that happening. That seems like the logical next step for Major League Baseball to grow. Obviously, we're not looking at any kind of expansion or anything like that. So I think that would be most likely the way they go, is playoffs and designated hitter. All right, moving on to the final segment of this show, of this episode, being the NFL. So obviously, we are one day away from Super Bowl 55. Which is crazy. It's crazy to think of. I remember Super Bowl 40, and obviously that's when we had Carson Palmer, and obviously there was a lot of excitement for the Bengals to potentially win and go to Super Bowl 40. And now here we are. It's been 15 years, and we are at Super Bowl 55. So we have the Kansas City Chiefs looking to win back-to-back Super Bowls for the first time since the Patriots did it in 2004-2005, I believe, is the years that they won back-to-back. But it was early 2000s. This will be the fourth appearance in the Super Bowl for the Kansas City Chiefs, whereas Tampa Bay, this will be their second appearance ever. Obviously, they won back in 2000 and I want to say either 2002 or 2003, but again, it was early 2000s as well. They will, however, be the first team to play the Super Bowl in their home stadium. Now, I am not a fan of that. And here's why I say that. This has nothing to do with Tom Brady or Gronkowski or anything about them. I personally am a big fan of destination championships. You think of college football, you think of college basketball, you think of typically the Super Bowl, where they are not in their home stadiums. Now obviously you have like the Major League Baseball does both of the teams home, you know, they rotate both team stadiums. NBA also rotates stadiums. It makes sense for them because they're playing a series, a best of seven. So it makes sense for them to do that system where they're playing at the home stadiums. For college football, college basketball, and the NFL, you're playing one game. Have it be somewhere, and I know they choose the Super Bowl destinations far in advance. Nobody, I mean, I guess some people could have guessed that Tampa Bay had a good chance of getting there this year, but I'm pretty sure it was probably announced 3-4 years ago. I would like to see when the Super Bowl was announced. I'm not exactly sure. But when it was announced was probably multiple years ago. And I'm sure that at that time, nobody knew. I mean, obviously Tom Brady and Gronkowski were not even in Tampa. Leonard Fournette was not in Tampa. You know, all these players, probably a good majority of these players outside of like Mike Evans, maybe even Chris Godwin, some of those players weren't even there yet. So knowing that Tampa Bay was going to get to the Super Bowl was not in their thinking. I don't like it. However, obviously there's nothing we can do about it, but Tampa Bay is the first team to play the Super Bowl at home. A few key stats. So Kansas City and Tampa Bay ranked number one and number two in their passing games this season. So you have the top two quarterbacks going against each other in the Super Bowl. So it's going to come down to whose defense, either one, whose defense can produce better, or two, whose running game is going to produce better. However, also, Kansas City ranked second in the amount of pressure they put on the quarterback this season, whereas Tom Brady and Tampa ranked 28th in production under pressure. So Kansas City pressures the quarterback hard. Tampa Bay struggled under QB pressure. Tom Brady struggled under QB pressure. Now, Tom Brady went from a New England Patriots team where he has built over the last 4,000 years. No. But throughout his career, they have built that offensive line to support Tom Brady. He goes to a Tampa Bay team that had not built an offensive line to support Tom Brady. So we have to take that into account here as to why Tom Brady struggled so much under pressure. He was probably under pressure a lot more. Otherwise, if he wasn't, then guys like Jameis Winston probably would still be there. If we're being realistic, quarterbacks are only, and I'm dead serious about this when I say this, quarterbacks are only as good as their offensive line. Look at Joe Burrow. Obviously, Cincinnati Bengals. I'm a Cincinnati guy. While they're not my number one team, they are still a team I follow. Joe Burrow, great, outstanding in his last year and a half in college. Number one draft pick. He's don't get me wrong, he's still destined to do great things in the NFL. I still think he's going to be a great quarterback, regardless of who he plays for. I still think that he will be a great quarterback. Had he played a full season, I still think he would have won Rookie of the Year over Justin Herbert. I do. I truly believe that. And people are saying now, because of everything that's happened, oh, Justin Herbert should have been, maybe he should have been the number one overall pick. You still would have the same issue, and it's not who the quarterback is with the Cincinnati Bengals, it's what their offensive line looks like. Joe Burrow will be, in my opinion, as long as he can recover from this injury, he will be a great quarterback. However, he will only be as good as his offensive line. If the Bengals don't get players to support him, then he is never going to be a high-quality quarterback. You look at Dak Prescott, who is usually ranked pretty high among quarterbacks. It's going to be hard for him to be a good quarterback if he does not have an offensive line. Matt Ryan, he's a decent quarterback. I would not call him elite. I don't know that I would even call Matt Ryan great. And that's coming from an Atlanta Falcons fan. But I would say he is a good quarterback. And the reason that he produces and got to a Super Bowl, regardless of that, I don't want to talk about that because that brings up bad memories. But the reason he is considered a good quarterback is a lot because he has an offensive line that helps keep him upright. If you take away the offensive lines that the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots for all those years had built, then Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady are not going to have as good of careers as they did or as they have so far. So some interesting key stats there. Injuries. Let's talk about that as we come down to the final game in the NFL. there's not a lot of big name players out with injuries or out with COVID due to COVID protocols. So Daniel Kilgore with the Chiefs obviously is out currently. He needs to test negative in order to be able to play. Sammy Watkins, I believe, is just questionable. There's a few other players that are going to be coming back from injuries. But we should have a pretty fully stocked, fully healthy lineups for this game. As far as COVID protocols, so anybody that tests positive is out. Obviously, at this point, we're a day away. So anybody that tests positive is out for the game. Anybody that was put onto the COVID list for close contact, all they have to do is continue to test negative. If they can test negative today and they test negative tomorrow, they're good to go. They should be activated and allowed to play, as far as I understand it. So we should have literally, as long as Kilgore and Sammy Watkins are able to play, we should have a full lineup on both sides. Super Bowl picks. All right, we're one day away. I might as well do this. I know everybody is predicting the Super Bowl right now, so I might as well throw my prediction out there. I'm torn. One, because the Chiefs are a very good team. Two, because I truly do not like Tom Brady. I am not a Tom Brady fan. He went to Michigan. He was with the Patriots. I just don't like him. I can't take away from what he's done, plus the fact of what he did to the Falcons a few years ago. So, however, he went into he walked into a silver platter, guys. Not to take away from his accomplishments in his career, but he walked into a team that already had established wide receivers, an established defense. Gronkowski followed him. Leonard Fournette went there solely because he went there. Antonio Brown went there solely because he went there. So don't tell me for one, don't tell me at all that Tom Brady built, you know, whatever the case may be. He got there solely because he walked into a team that was already built. Tom Brady was not going to go to a Detroit Lions. He was not going to go to a Jacksonville Jaguars or a New York Jets. Let's be realistic here. He went to Tampa solely for who was there. Now, that's my little tangent there. My prediction, despite how good Tom Brady has been, despite all of his connections, I cannot go against the Kansas City Chiefs and what they have done. My prediction, Kansas City Chiefs win back-to-back Super Bowls. As far as a score, I truly believe this is going to be a high-scoring game. I'm going to go 38-33. No, I'm going to go 38-31. One touchdown difference. 38-31, Kansas City wins the Super Bowl. Super Bowl MVP, Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, I like that prediction. I think I'm going to go with that. All right, real quick, because I've just got a few minutes left here before we end this first episode of the podcast. Let's talk the NFL trade that just happened this past week. Matthew Stafford goes to the Los Angeles Rams. Jared Goff goes to the Detroit Lions. The Lions also get a third-round pick this year, as well as a first-round pick the next two drafts. All right. Folks, let's discuss this real quick. Matthew Stafford, who is not in his prime anymore, in my opinion, he has already plateaued. But Matthew Stafford, who is not an elite quarterback, Matthew Stafford, who I wouldn't even consider a great quarterback, I would consider him a decent quarterback. You're telling me a decent quarterback netted a younger quarterback who's been to the Super Bowl, as well as a third round pick and two first round picks. That blows my mind. And we can get into a discussion about contracts and all that at another time, but it blows my mind. Matthew Stafford is not worth two first round picks, much less a third and a Super Bowl quarterback. Now we can discuss, and we will, the stats. We'll discuss Jared Goff and what he's done. Obviously, he's had his struggles. But the fact is that he did lead a team to the Super Bowl. And you're telling me that all Jared Goff is worth, you can't even do a straight up trade. That's what the Rams just told Jared Goff. Matthew Stafford is better than you, and we have to send draft picks to them too, because you're not good enough. That blows my mind. And we'll see. Now, last season, Jared Goff had more completions, had more attempts, passing attempts, and had more a higher completion percentage. He was also sacked far less. Matthew Stafford had more yards, more touchdowns, more interception, or I'm sorry, less interceptions, and more average yards per pass. So Matthew Stafford takes what was already good numbers in passing to a team that has a good offensive line, seen in the fewer sacks allowed by the Rams on Goff. Goff takes his already high passing numbers to a team that can't protect their quarterback. I feel bad for Jared Goff in this situation because not only are you telling him that he's not as good of a quarterback and you have to give up a lot to get rid of him, but now he goes to a team that isn't going to be able to support him. And we're definitely going to see, I mean, unless something clicks in his head and he becomes elite out there, obviously they have DeAndre Swift at their running back. If they can pull off some wide receivers in this draft and an offensive line, maybe they can salvage it, but come on, it's Detroit. Let's be honest here. This is the end of Jared Goff as we know him, which is sad for somebody that was a number two overall pick. But we'll get into that a little bit more. The upcoming NFL season, obviously, we'll get into that more next episode. We'll talk more free agency in the NBA, or I'm sorry, in Major League Baseball. We'll talk the NFL draft in future episodes. We'll talk, is college football coming back for normal spring? We'll definitely start diving into college basketball. You know, we're coming up on March Madness, so I don't follow a lot of college basketball during the season. I'm going to be honest with you. There's just so many games. It's hard to do. But March Madness is something I follow very, very well. I make brackets. I do everything trying to predict the winners. So we will dive into college basketball in future episodes as we get closer to March Madness. NBA, I'll be honest. Also, I only.